Parshas Matos. This parsha begins with a very important mitzvah. How careful we are supposed to be when we speak. Sometimes we may think that words are really not that important. After all, you can't see words, you can't touch words. You could only hear them. And once you say a few words, they just disappear into the thin air. But the truth is that it's not so. When a person says words, those words are very, very powerful. As we know, that a Yid has the power to bless another Yid. When we say something good to another Yid, Hashem hears it, and Hashem will fulfill it. And not only to the other Yid, but to you too. And this is why we shouldn't take our davening lightly. Because when we daven to Hashem, the words that we say are taken by malachim, by angels, and brought up to Hashem to form a beautiful crown. And that's why when we daven, we make sure to use our voice and to say every word clearly. Yes, the words that come out of our mouth are very special. And that's why we should be careful how we use our speech. To use it only in a good way that can help us serve Hashem better. And of course, to use our words only for words of Ahavas Yisrael, when we speak to another Yid, or to anyone, to speak nicely and gently. After all, the mouth of a Yid is so holy, because so many words of Torah pass through our mouth. That's right, every time you learn, and every time you daven, your mouth becomes holier and holier, just like an Aron Kodesh, a holy ark in which Sefer Torahs are placed. We surely will put into an Aron Kodesh only holy things, such as a Sefer Torah. The same thing is with the mouth of a Yid. Since it is used for such holy purposes as learning and davening, especially that we have the great privilege to say Hashem's name so many times each day. That's right. To say Hashem's holy name is such a great schus, and that itself makes us so much holier. And that's why we are so careful not to allow anything in our mouth that doesn't belong there. We're only going to say good words and happy things. Things that make ourselves happy, that make Hashem happy, and make all the Yidden happy. There was once a chassid who came to the Tzemach Tzedek. He had a very serious problem. His son was very, very sick. And all the doctors gave up hope. All the medicines that they tried did not help. And now the chassid came to the Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzedek, to ask him for a bracha. The Tzemach Tzedek said to him, Tracht gut vet sein gut. Think good and it will be good. That means the Tzemach Tzedek is instructing the chassid to have bitachin in Hashem, to have strong hope and faith in Hashem that everything will be good. Not only that it could be good, not only that it might be good, but that it will be good. And sure enough, when the chassid came home, he was only too happy to find his son healthy, happy, and well. When the chassid asked the members of the family what had happened, they said they don't know. But suddenly, at a certain time of the day, the boy got well and got out of bed. The chassid figured out that that was exactly the time when he left the Rebbe's room, starting to think good. Yes, as the Rebbe said, tracht gut, vet sein gut. Think good, and it will be good. And that's exactly what happened. Now, if this is so by thinking good, how much more so is it by speaking good? This will surely bring about all of Hashem's brachas to all of us in an open way, both for our neshama and our body. And this is what this week's parsha begins with, about a person that while he was speaking, he made a promise. He promised either to do something, or he promised not to do a certain thing. Then he must keep his promise. A person shouldn't just think, I just said a few words, it's nothing. No, it is not true. As we have just learned, words of a Yid are very powerful. They stay. Hashem records every word that we say. And if a person makes a promise, he must keep it. Our Chachamim tell us it's better that a person should never make promises. If he wants to say that he's going to do something, he should better say Beli Neder, which means it's without a promise, so that just in case he doesn't do it, he will not get a sin. And the same thing is also about making promises about something that we did. Like to say, I promise I did my homework, or I promise that I went to the store, or to say a promise that we did not do a certain thing. I promise I didn't break that glass, or I promise I didn't take your pencil. We are not supposed to use the word promise, even if you're sure about it, because a promise is a very serious matter. There are many stories of great people who, instead of promising something that they were allowed to promise about, they rather paid money in order not to promise. Now, there are some times that our Chachamim say that it's good to promise, but that's only when it's very, very necessary. For example, let's say a person had some sinful habits, and he wants to do teshuvah. For example, let's say there's a person who used to go by a certain store and used to buy a food which wasn't kosher. So he's allowed to make a promise that he's never, ever again going to pass by that store. Now, once he makes a promise, it will make it harder for him to go near that store, so he won't buy any non-kosher food. Of course, it's better not to make the promise, but if necessary, he is allowed to make a promise. The same thing is also with a mitzvah. Let's say a person sees that a mitzvah is coming his way, and he's afraid that he might miss it. So he's allowed to make a promise, that he promises to do this and this mitzvah, because he doesn't want to miss the opportunity. There is also another time when a person can make a promise, and that is if chas v'shalom, a person is in danger, like Yaakov Avinu did when he was running away from Esav. He knew that he was in danger because he was running away from someone who wanted to murder him. And where was he going? To Lavan, who was a Rasha, who would try to destroy him. Therefore, before Yaakov left Haramidia, he made a promise to Hashem. Please, Hashem, bring me back to my father's home safely. I promise to offer karbanos on Haramidia when I return. I will set aside for you 1/10 of whatever I earn. And Hashem protected Yaakov. Yaakov left Lavan's house not only alive and healthy, but very rich. Yes, When a person is in distress, in danger, and he makes a promise to Hashem to give tzedakah or to do a special mitzvah, that itself is a great merit for him, a great zchus that Hashem should help him, that everything should turn out good. Now, what if someone makes a promise and then realizes that it's too hard for him to keep it? For example, let's say he promised that he's never going to eat anything that comes from wheat. Now, later, when it comes Shabbos, he wants to eat a seuda and he wants to eat challah. And challah is made from flour that comes from wheat. And he doesn't want to get stuck and not be able to eat challah every Shabbos. After all, it's a mitzvah to eat challah by a seuda of Shabbos. So what should he do? And there is family sitting around the table. Everyone has challah, and he can't. Now he regrets it. He feels sorry for making that promise. Now, does he have any way out? Well, he can't eat challah, because that would be a sin. But there is another solution. And that's what the Torah tells us. This is called Hatoras Nidarim, to cancel the promise, to take away the promise. How can that be done? So the Torah tells us that he should go to a Talmud Chacham, who's an expert in these laws, or he can choose just any three Yidden. They will be considered like a Beis Din. And when he goes to them, they can take away the promise from him. How's this done? He has to explain all the details of his promise to the judge, the Talmud Chacham, or the three judges of the Beis Din. Then they're going to see if there is anywhere in his words that they can find an excuse to take off his promise. That means to see that there is somewhere in his words a sign that he regrets and feels sorry for making that promise. They will ask him, "If you knew that it's so difficult to keep your promise, would you have made this promise?" "No, I would never have made this promise." That means that it's as if he never made this promise to begin with. And then the judge says, "Mutar lach, you are freed from it." And then he can go and eat challah once again. And the same thing is with any promise that a person makes and later regrets it. He has to go to a Talmud Chacham or to three Yidden who will be his Beis Din, and they will cancel his promise. Now, the Torah also tells us that there are some times that a person can make a promise and the promise is not counted to begin with. When is that? Well, first of all, a child who makes a promise is not really counted. He does not have to go to a Talmud Chacham to take off his promise. Of course, for the sake of chinuch, he should train himself not to make promises if he's not going to keep them. Then, a girl from the age of 11 and a boy from the age of 12, if they understand the meaning of a promise, why they're promising, and what they're promising about, then their promise does count. That's right, a year before bar or bas mitzvah, the promise already counts, and if they want to take it off, they have to go to the Talmud Chacham. And then the Torah tells us that a girl from the age of 12, when she's bas mitzvah, until she's 12 and a half, her father can cancel all of her promises that they won't even count to begin with. Let's say a father hears his daughter, who is 12 years old, saying a certain promise. He can say, "Your promise is worthless. It's nothing." And then her promise is nothing. She doesn't have to go to a Talmud Chacham. It just does not count. And this goes on until she's 12 and a half years old. Once she's 12 and a half, then if she makes a promise, then she's on her own. And even if her father says it doesn't count, it still is a promise. The same thing is also with a married woman. If she makes a promise about something that can disturb the way of life between her and her husband can immediately say, "Your promise is nothing," and then her promise does not count. Now the Torah tells us that there is a condition. The only time that the father can make his daughter's promise not count, and the only time that a husband can make his wife's promise not count, is only if they didn't accept it right away. But let's say they left a whole day go, and it became sunset. And once it got nighttime, they said, "Oh, your promise that you made today is worthless." It's too late. The promise is a promise. It's only if they caught it on that very same day, then the promise can be taken off. The Medrash tells us, if we take a look in the Parsha V'zois HaBracha, Moshe is called Ish Ha'Elokim. What does that mean? Was Moshe a Ish, a husband of Elokim, of Hashem? And the Medrash says that it means that Moshe acted as if he is the husband and Hashem is the wife. This we see when Moshe took away one of the promises that Hashem made. After the sin of the golden calf, Hashem threatened, "I swore that whoever worships powers other than me shall be destroyed." Moshe stood up and prayed to Hashem, "Didn't you teach me at Har Sinai the laws of Hataras Nedarim, of canceling one's promises? A teacher who wishes that others obey what he teaches must himself act in that way. When the Yidden worshipped the golden calf, they thought that their actions were permitted. So, you can take off what you swore." Wrapping himself in his talis, Moshe sat down and acted as the Talmud Chacham. And Hashem, so to speak, stood and asked Moshe to take off his promise. And of course Moshe did, and the Yidden were saved. And now the Torah tells us how the Yidden prepared for the war against Midian. As we have learned before already, that Bilam gave advice to the Midianim. He said to them, "Are you stronger than the powerful armies of Mitzrayim? If Mitzrayim wasn't able to win over the Jewish people, do you expect to win over them? But if you want to listen to my advice, listen what you shall do. If you can get the Jewish people to sin by marrying your Goyish daughters, that will make their God very angry at them, because their God hates such a sin." Yes, this was the advice from Bilam, that the Midianim should get the Jewish people to sin. And we know what happened at the end of Parshas Balak, that some Yidden sinned, and because of that, 24,000 Yidden died in a plague that Hashem brought on the Yidden. And now came the time that Hashem is going to punish Bilam and the Midianim. Hashem said to Moshe, "Nikoim nikmas b'nei Yisrael, take revenge of the Jewish people from the Midianim." Yes, Hashem is now telling Moshe that the Yidden should make a war and destroy Midian. Now actually, also the daughters of Moav were involved in this sin. So why didn't Hashem tell Moshe that the Yidden should also make a war against Moav? Well, it's because Moav was not as bad as the Midianim. The Moavim did it because they were afraid of the Yidden. They thought that the Yidden will rob them. And that's why they came and made trouble for the Yidden to defend themselves. But that was not the case with Midian. Midian was not afraid that the Yidden are going to harm them. Midian had nothing to do with the Yidden. The Yidden weren't even in that direction. They weren't even going next to Midian. Midian just came out of hatred, just to harm the Yidden. That's the only reason why they did it. And that's why Midian deserves to get punished. And there is another reason why Hashem didn't want the Yidden to destroy Moav. It's because later on, a great tzaddikus by the name Rus is going to come from the land of Moav. Now, Hashem told Moshe that right after this war against Midian, Moshe is going to pass away. That's right. As we know, the Yidden are very close to Eretz Yisrael. And Moshe was not allowed to enter Eretz Yisrael. Moshe is going to pass away in the Midbar. And Yahushua is going to lead the Yidden into Eretz Yisrael. But before Moshe passes away, Hashem wants him to make the war against Midian. So now the Yidden are beginning to prepare for the war against Midian. Now, since Moshe knew that after the war against Midian, he's going to pass away, Moshe could have pushed off the war for a while. He could have waited a few years, and like this, Moshe would live longer. And especially that Hashem didn't even tell Moshe that he has to make the war right away. So Moshe could have taken his time. Yet Moshe went ahead and did it b'simcha, with joy, because he knew that this is the will of Hashem. Now, if we take a look in the Sefer Yehoshua, we see that Yehoshua acted differently. Hashem promised Yehoshua that he will not pass away until he finished dividing up the entire land to the Yidden. Yehoshua thought to himself, well, then why the rush? Let me take my time. I will make a slow battle against the 31 kings of the land. Because as long as the wars are not ended, I will live longer, and I'll be able to lead the Yidden. Now, of course, Yehoshua didn't think about this just for his own purposes, because he was selfish, chas v'shalom. He did it because he knew with Ruach HaKodesh that after he passes away, the Yidden will not serve Hashem as good as they served him while he was alive. And that's why he thought, let me stay with the Yidden as long as possible. And if we take a look in the Sefer Yehoshua, it tells us that it did take a long time until he finished making the war with all those kings. Now, was Hashem happy with what Yehoshua did? Well, not really. Hashem wanted that the Yidden should take over the land as soon as possible, because Eretz Yisrael is such a holy land. As our Chachamim tell us, there are 10 types of Kedusha in this land. And because Yehoshua held the Yidden back from taking over the land that has 10 types of Kedusha, Hashem shortened Yehoshua's life by 10 years. Instead of living to the age of 120 like Moshe, Yehoshua passed away at the age of 110. But Moshe obeyed Hashem right away, and he immediately began to get his army ready for the war. Moshe announced to the people, we are taking the revenge of Hashem against Midian, By destroying them, we will erase the Chilul Hashem that was caused by their bad deeds. Now, if we take a look in the Pasuk, when Hashem tells Moshe to take revenge of the Yitin from the Midianim, Hashem calls it the revenge of the Yitin. When Moshe spoke to the Yidden, he calls it the revenge of Hashem. Well, whose revenge is it? The Yidden or of Hashem? And Rashi explains, whoever stands up against the Yidden is as if he's standing up against Hashem. So it is actually the revenge for the Yidden and for Hashem. Moshe selected a small army of 12,000 tzaddikim, 1,000 from each shevet, including shevet Levi. The two shvatim, Menashe and Ephraim, were counted as one. Then Moshe chose another 1,000 yidden from each shevet, who were chosen to guard the belongings of the army and to give them food. And then he chose 3,000 from each shevet who would stand and daven near the battlefield. Then Moshe appointed Pinchas as one of the leaders in the war against Midian. Now you may ask, why did Pinchas go to war and Elazar the Kohen Gadol did not go? Because Hashem said, he who began to fulfill the mitzvah, he killed Cosby, the daughter of Tzur. Let him finish the mitzvah and get rid of all the Midianim. Yes, that was Pinchas. He's the one who killed Cosby, the Midianite. And that's why he's going to finish off the mitzvah, getting rid of all of the Midianim. Another reason why Pinchas went was because he had a separate nekama, a separate revenge to take of the Midianim. As you remember, in Parshas Vayeshev, Yosef HaTzadik was sold as a slave. To whom was Yosef sold? To the Mitzrayim. Like it says, V'hamidonim machru Yosef, the Midianim sold him to Mitzrayim. Yes, the Midianim. And because they're the ones who did it to Yosef, Pinchas, who is the great-grandson of Yosef, wants to take revenge from the Midianim. How is Pinchas a great-grandchild of Yosef? Well, we learned before that Pinchas's mother was a daughter of Yisrael, and at the same time, she was also a descendant from Yosef's family. And since the Midianim did that to Yosef, Pinchas is now taking revenge. And then our Chachamim give us a third reason why Pinchas went to the war. Pinchas was Meshuach Milchama. He was the Kohen who was anointed for battle. Just like a Kohen Gadol is anointed, the same thing, there was a special Kohen who was anointed to be in charge of a milchama, a battle. His job would be to speak to the army before they go to war and tell them to be strong, not to lose heart, but to trust in Hashem's help. And this Kohen would also wear the 8 holy garments of the Kohen Gadol. So like this, he would be able to ask questions of the Urim V'Tumim if necessary. Moshe also sent along the Aron. That is the Aron that had the broken Luchos. As we know, there were 2 Aronos. One Aron was in the Mishkan, and that had the Luchos. And the second Aron had the broken Luchos, and that was the Aron that would go out with the Yidden to war.